are back. It is Friday, April 19th, 2024. This is Futures Power Hour. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio. He's Ilya Spivak. What a wild 24 hours it's been here in the futures market. For those that only ETFs or stocks and only pay attention from the opening bell at 9:30 to the closing bell at 4 p.m., you may have seen some really interesting charts shared in financial media or in FinTwit because of what happened in the futures market overnight. But by the time we got to the U.S. Open, it seemed like nothing had happened at all compared to where we closed yesterday. Israel strikes back against Iran. Total shocker for me. I was taking the under on that personally because they had just said a few days ago they're not going to do anything in the run-up to Passover. But it was a very minor strike. Iran came out and effectively denied it. I know that because I was watching Iranian state television last night at midnight Eastern. And that was a line that they
were me both, actually.
There was nothing. No problem. It's the Ayatollah's birthday, after all. Israel was just sending him a little bit of a present. How generous of them. And so we find ourselves overnight retracing what were very aggressive losses over the course of the session, particularly at the start of the Asian hours, from about 9 to midnight. And then the markets turn higher, and the S&P goes from near 49.60 up back to about 50.50 or so. But there's a funny thing about markets that are in areas or states of decline, Ilya. Akin to what happened earlier this year and at the end of last, when you saw minor dips that were soon bought up, when you couldn't keep a good market down, dare I say that it's been very difficult today to keep a bad market up.
Yeah.
The tape action over the course of today's session is anything but reassuring for bulls, who came into the U.S. trading hours today with a gift basket of an opportunity presented to
every them. Reason. They had every reason.
A beautiful exhaustion, perhaps, and a fundamental catalyst of this war tension being geared up. Both sides are saying that this is basically done. Whether or not that won't mean there's future engagement is another story, but this escalation ladder appears to have reached its crescendo apex and is now in that decline phase. When you look at the candlesticks in some of these charts right now, those long wicks in ES, in NQ, in the Russell, in the yen, in gold, in oil, would make you think that this is an exhaustion type of day. And so when you come into the session where we've retraced effectively 100 points in ES from high to low, and the market now finds itself 30 handles lower, you can't help but question, is this something related to OPEX, or is this a continuation of what has already been a weaker market? Sure, the geopolitics may be off the table, but even absent that, this is a market that was destined to be going lower today. Anyway, Ilya, how is your read on things here and what's a pretty lackadaisical type of OPEX Friday?
Well, I think the first thing that catches my mind here is that, at least in the FX markets, there is a sense that maybe we've gone a long way. For example, the euro, not really going anywhere. Dollar, not really making much headway there. Aussie dollar, not really making much headway there. Big spikes there. The pound can't find a bottom. So that's interesting. I still have that one on. But when you look at stocks today, it seems like we're getting a view of this was never about geopolitics. This sell-off was not a geopolitics sell-off. It started before the war of words between Israel and Iran really started to heat up as we were going into the end of last week. It got a little bit of an amplifier, but just as it seemed like the cycle of violence wasn't going to escalate, we closed the loop on it. Well, as you just mentioned, all of the messaging out of Tehran has been very similar to Israel's messaging after the attack from the other side, saying there's been no casualties, this is an outrage, and there's nothing that actually occurred. So it looks like it was very stage managed from every side. I would not be surprised if there was a little bird that chirped to Tehran ahead of this. Hey, you might want to not have people in these particular areas at this particular time. Just say. And so it seems like what this sell-off is about is much more the kind of liquidation, the kind of markets deflating what had been a speculative run-up that ran out of juice and was due for some distribution. distribution that essentially just a process that continues. Now, we are getting to some levels here where either I'm going to reload my shorts or I'm going to take them off and wait to reload them at a slightly higher level after a bounce. But I'm not sure I want to do anything on a Friday, especially when things are still going my way. So we'll see here. But these long wicks definitely throw you for a loop because on the one hand, they look like exhaustion, but on the other hand, they're geopolitics wicks. And so
exactly,
one might just take a little eraser on your pencil and just erase them off because they don't actually speak to exhaustion necessarily.
Right. It's almost as if we have the move overnight is completely wiped off the board, at least in ES. And then we go back and say, okay, well, where were we yesterday afternoon at 4 p.m. when the market closed? What were we thinking and doing then? Let's go back to that type of trading activity. And so the basically, market is kind of slowly grinding a little bit lower over the course of the session. Tom pointed something out a few days ago. He goes, if I'm a bull in this market, the one thing I want to see stop happening, and this isn't verbatim, but he said something along the lines of, the one thing I want to see stop happening is this whole thing where the market rallies overnight and then you get a little pop at the open and then all of a sudden you, by the end of the first hour, you're fading and then you're selling off into the close. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing overseas investors see it as a discount and then US investors are offloading when they have the chance during North American hours. So, you know, and today was kind of like that as well, where you got the pop overnight off the lows, the US session opens up and then you start making your trek back to the downside. Ilya, next week though, we have an interesting macro calendar. It is a Fed's communication blackout window week, if I recall correctly, because we have a May 1st Fed meeting. And so this would be the full week prior to that Fed meeting. Right. And that means we're going to have very many fewer catalysts here, but it's not like the Fed has left us with nothing to think about and chew on. New York Fed President John Williams in recent days has said that a hike may be necessary. Fed Chair Powell himself has said that we don't know if we'll have the confidence to even cut rates this year.
Today, Goolsbee, the dove of the doves that's ever doved, seemed to flip also. And that caught my eye.
And may have been one of the reasons why you start to see the stock market pull back in. Although oil prices, which were down, are now back up, last time I checked at least. And so stocks perhaps still proving sensitive there. But Ilya, when I look at the calendar next week, I also see that we have the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, PCE. It happens to be coming out now during a communications blackout window. And so the market has already reacted to the expectations of what CPI and PPI have put forth. And because of how PCE is constructed, you can take components from CPI and PPI and basically plug them in to have a fairly reasonable estimate, right? With a high degree of accuracy, within a tenth of a percent or so on either end to know where price pressures are going. And the PCE looks like it's going to be edging up again, which is obviously one of the reasons why I think Powell and co laid down the marker this week. Because if this PCE index report comes out next week and PCE, both in the headline and core and super core, are all moving higher and the Fed can't comment on it, you're going to have this flurry of speculation while the Fed's lips are sealed going into that May 1st meeting where the market starts overreacting. So when we get a higher inflation reading next week, the Fed's already laid down the gauntlet that they see that there's potential for no cut this year, that maybe even a hike is possible again. And so perhaps it insulates the market from an overreaction on what is a PCE index that looks like it's going up, but it's not going to be a good report. Either way, the singularly most important thing of the week is not going to be one that, you know, rate cutanistas are going to be looking for if they're hoping for any sort of sign that June is still a possibility.
I think that's exactly right. I agree with absolutely everything that you just said. I think actually for me, it's the GDP report that's the more live risk because the PCE, we kind of know where it's going. It'll probably be a little on the warmer side. It probably registers relatively in line with expectations for the exact reasons you've just mentioned. We've seen CPI, we've seen PPI, we kind of know what this is. So if we're going to get a kind of a data hit into the sort of collective calculus of Fed policy odds, I think it's the GDP number. If that GDP number is warmer than expected. I think that's the bigger kind of concern here that might really get the Fed looking and saying, all right, we got to put the brakes on this thing.
What's warmer to you? Are you looking to the Atlanta Fed as your anchor point for GDP expectations, or is there, you know, Bloomberg consensus forecast? What do you think is the most viable gauge that people should anchor their expectation to?
So I think if we look right now, right, what we're seeing as far as the baseline expectation that I think the market is going to be kind of benchmarking from is we're looking for a 2.1% annualized growth rate. If we get anything meaningfully warmer above that, let's call it 2.3, 2.4, that would really be enough. That would be a slowdown from the prior number. The prior number was 3.4%, which was very hot. But if we come in anywhere kind of north of 2.1, which is the kind of baseline that everybody sees on their Bloomberg terminal screen around trading floors globally, I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that to tell you, okay, it's not just that this is a flash in the pan inflation. This is an economy that's stronger than people think in a meaningful kind of big data way. And if that's what it is, then there's very little that Powell and company can do. There's very little to hedge. At that point, you have to come out on May 1st and tell the people in official communication that you are definitely, certainly, for sure, not on a preset course. So that when you come back in June, you don't freak anybody out when you move your SEP.
When those rate cuts come off the board and the dot plot says one cut in 20.
One cut, yeah.
I think that's, they're not going to go to zero initially in June, but I think they'll move it down.
They can't. That would be too fast for them.
But going to one, the market's already pricing in what? We're talking about a 20. I think maybe because of the bond yield movement today overnight, SR3 is following in a tiny bit, but you know, it's like 30% chance of a second cut this year.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at Fed funds right now, we've priced, well, this very moment, as a matter of fact, we've priced in one cut, so that's 33 basis points, so 25 basis points in, and about an 8% chance of another. Which is, I mean, it's very low.
Very, very, okay. So even lower than what I described. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point, right? So the market, that puts you back into an interesting spot then, where then one of the effects of the decline that you stipulated, why did the market stop rallying? It's when we cross the Rubicon of the market pricing in more cuts than the Fed. And once it matched the Fed and then went beyond the Fed and got more hawkish than the Fed, the market stalled and then started to decline. And so maybe once you get to the reset of those Fed expectations, then that means like, okay, the board's clear. There's nothing excessive priced in still by the market. We can then resume what we were doing and start reacting to the data normally, where if inflation's better, then we go up. If not, then maybe we push back the timing of that first cut. I still think that a first cut this year is looking like, from my perspective, it's out the window. The opportunity's been missed. I
mean, maybe they do something in December.
Maybe.
As a token, and let's just clarify for a second. I think your percentages were much closer to right. So that's 8 basis points, or about 30% probability.
Yeah.
So it's
32.
It's 8 basis points out of a 25 that's been baked in for the second cut. The bottom line is that it's less than even. The markets think there's a less than 50-50 shot of a second cut, which is, I mean, compared to the Fed's 3, a staggering disparity now.
Which actually puts you in a very interesting place when you look at equity markets today, which is really a kind of choose your own adventure kind of day. I know that stocks hold gains again, but let's just run around the horn here real quick. Let's say you're a bull's bull. You may have wandered over to the Dow Jones today. Look at that beautiful reversal candle. We're sitting close to the session highs. It's a big, long lower wick. It's coming right at that big swing support we had in the middle of January. This is picture perfect. Hey, a little bit higher from here. And this is a bullish outside engulfing bar, a key reversal after a 5% decline. That looks like a bottoming signal. Not too shabby. Hey, you know what? I could go over to the Russell and okay, it's still an up bar. And it's not quite as bad as everything else, but you know what? There was a head and shoulders pattern here, and that measured move brought us down to about, you know, 1969,
And we're at support.
And we're at support. Swing lows that we had in February.
Very, very clean, very kind of technically attractive, as it were.
And the four-hour chart here kind of looks like maybe it's a bullish falling wedge that we're breaking out of.
Yeah.
That looks really good. So if the Dow Jones, which has been, you know, such a laggard, and the Russell, which has been such a dog, these guys are doing, you know, good or at least great. I mean, the Dow looks great, relatively speaking.
It's not bad
at all. Surely, surely the NASDAQ and the S&P are doing well today, too.
This is...
Hold on a second here.
Uh-oh. Wait, no. No,
that's not looking so hot all of a sudden. Okay, well, the NASDAQ, you know, it's all the tech stocks, and those are like those are the leaders in the market. So surely at least the NASDAQ is holding
this
up here.
Don't shoot the general's counter case.
Oh,
right here.
Wait a second. You're getting four very different signals here, depending upon the indexes you're looking at. And again, like choose your own adventure. There's also a point here, technically speaking, where from the NASDAQ and the S&P, Ilya, you, Dylan, and I were chatting last night, where the measured move from this double top, this whatever you want to call equidistant consolidation, is 700 points. And that brings you down to 17,300. And we're getting a little bit of a wick in the market right around these levels.
Yeah.
For the S&P 500, the head and shoulders target, we've been talking about this all week long.
505,
5333.5 less 5167.25 is 167.25 range. You subtract that from the neckline, that brings you 5000.25.
Yeah.
And now we have a long wicky candle right into that area, right into a former swing level where we had resistance at the end of January and the beginning of February. And that looks like it's a washout kind of low point. And I also think about the fact that less than 10% of stocks right now in the S&P 500 are trading above their 20-day moving average, which over the past several years, that's been a real unique occurrence. When that happens, it doesn't happen and stick around for a while. But more importantly, it's coincided with every significant swing low that we've seen in the post-COVID era. Even in 2022, when you were looking at a market that was in decline for effectively 9 months that year from January through October. So the candlestick action today in the NASDAQ is garbage. In the S&P, it's eye-raising. In the Dow, it's outright encouraging. In the Russell, you're kind of like mama bear, like not too, it's just not warm enough yet, right? Mm-hmm. It's not Goldilocks. The Dow looks Goldilocks. But this is still an ugly tape. And that's the summary I arrived at, which is why stocks can't hold on to their gains. Because if you look at the S&P, the NASDAQ, the ones that we really care about, who's trading the Dow futures, right? Honestly, look at the trading volumes. This is the prime point of focus for investors. And it's, you need something more still. This is the lacking the kind of conviction.
Yeah.
Period, end of story.
You can see it when you get into, let's say, a four-hour chart. So you just work us down to a four-hour on ES. And what you see is much less encouraging than what you see on the daily, where that geopolitics wick makes it look more encouraging, frankly, than it does when you look at the price action nearer term. Because what you see here is a bounce to retest former support as resistance and then failure.
Again, by the way, this has been these stair steps this week.
Yeah, you get failure again. And so the only reason I'm not touching my put spreads here yet, I was itching this morning, just about a half hour before we started the show here. I opened it up. I said, oh, Euro's not making headway. Okay, I'm going to get out of that position. Oh, Aussie's not making headway. Okay, I'm going to get out of that position. Pound's making headway, fine. But that the Euro isn't doing it, that the Aussie isn't doing it, doesn't give me a lot of confidence about these these stocks continuing. Let me take this off. It'll bounce a little. I'll reload next week. Market's down, but it can't go down in a straight line. This is good money we're making. Let's take it. Let's come back next week. And then I go down to a 4-hour time frame on ES on NQ. I'm like, no, this thing doesn't want to go up.
We're still respecting the downtrend that's been in place since Monday, plain and simple.
Yeah.
And it's been very plain as day. We've had these lines drawn on the hourly chart all week long, where it's been initially, let's get above 51.25 or below 50.78. And then it was, okay, let's get back above 50.78 or below 50.50.
Yeah.
And that head and shoulders pattern calling for a move down to 5,025 ultimately overshot yesterday, perhaps because of those geopolitical fears.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you were trading based on that pattern, one, there's two ways to go about this. And I think back to how people may have managed positions back in January when I was trading off of the inverse head and shoulders pattern.
Sure.
When the S&P 500 broke through 49.51. And it was, okay, once you hit your target, it was 48.51 to reach the upside target of 49.71. Once you hit 49.71, mm-hmm. you can manage the position in one of two ways. You can take full thing off because the position or pattern has played out. Or you have to think of it more as a momentum play now, where you take half off the table and you start to add a trailing moving average to effectively have a stop loss behind it. So that way, if the market does turn and the momentum fails, you don't give up the gains from the position having been completed and then doubt yourself for, oh, the position was hit. Why did I try to be greedy? So
right.
In this case here, right, if I've been trading this to the downside the past several days, knowing that this near-term head and shoulders pattern may have just been completed, and now that risk is coming off the table, the oil vols came in last night, the gold vols came in last night, which was a pretty important tell, I thought. Tweeted about it, texted you about it.
Mm-hmm.
Take some off maybe, or roll out. Give yourself more time. Give yourself more time, because this is an area where there could be a little bit of an exhaustion.
Yeah.
The last time that we saw this few of stocks trading above their one-month moving average was the last week of October in 2023. That was the week that the stock market bottomed. That was an exhaustion point. So a lot's come off the board very quickly. We erased the year-to-date gain in the NASDAQ at one point overnight. A lot's come off the board very, very quickly here.
Yeah.
It's a good time to manage the position. Give yourself a little bit more time. Be prepared if there's a little bit of give back here. But you have a very clear downtrend in place still. I would just watch the weekly downtrend on this hourly chart for ES if I'm short. And if we get on the other side,
that's basically what I'm doing. I'm basically sitting with my phone in my hand, watching the charts of ES and NQ and going, do you have steam? Do you have steam? I'll check in on you every 15 minutes. Do you have steam? Are we doing this? Because if we're not doing it, I'm going to take it. Are we doing it? What are we doing?
It is OPEX Friday as well. And Tommy, the point the other day, you know, going into the market on Friday, you have to think stocks are going to get hit a little bit lower given how interest rates have moved over the past month and this, that, the other thing. So the market's behaving today in accordance with what's been the trend this week and with factors that I think have been discussed on the network by other people here very astutely. So as a bull, the daily wick that you see in ES, I think is a little deceiving right now.
It definitely is. It definitely is. It looks much more exhaustion-like than meets the eye because there decided to be a bunch of fireworks in Isfahan overnight.
Just, again, a happy birthday present for the Ayatollah. Very generous of the IDF to send those his way. When you look at the Russell here, one of the indexes that's up on the day, it's difficult to say that this is breaking out as well. I just want to recalibrate the trend line here to this, because you could see that the most recent swing high that we had during the
session.
Although
this is a little better.
It's a little bit better.
It's a little bit better.
But is it anything to get really jazzed up about yet, right?
No. It's not anything that ought to make one bullish, but it is something that if you're already short in this, which I'm not, I don't have exposure here. But if you are looking at this and going, okay, if I thought this was near an exhaustion point, I've still got more of a chance that in fact, yes, maybe.
It's worth keeping an eye on if you're, again, already short at a validation point, you get back through 1970 or so. I think today's swing high, just for whatever reason, on the four-hour time frame, the 21 EMA on the four-hour time frame since the decline started after CPI on April 10th, that has been
anchor, yeah.
It's been a pretty good, yeah, it's been a pretty good anchoring point for the downtrend. Every time we've run into it, we have sold off. Mm-hmm. So again, talking about not any single moving average, I just go up the Fibonacci EMA scale. And right now we have 21 and 34 on here. Not any single moving average is going to be particularly important. Although I like the ones that happen to round out to a week, like the 5 or the 21, which is the average trading days in a given month. In this case, 21 on a 4 hour means nothing. 21 on a daily means something. 21 on a 4 hour means right. nothing, but it happens to be the trend line that the market is respecting for whatever reason during this impulse lower. So a tell that this market is done with the impulse lower here. Yes, we have that long wick on the daily chart, getting through that 21 EMA on the 4 hour time frame with a close through it would be something unique that has not happened since April 10th, plus that bullish falling wedge that's coming together would make you think that we have again reached an exhaustion low and the market's due for a bounce. Does that mean that we're going back to the yearly high? No, that's not the call being made here. The call is that the near-term impulse that's carried us to the downside may have reached this point because we've gone from a world where three cuts were priced in down to now it's just over one. And so
it's a whole other thing.
A lot of that fuel has now been spent. The geopolitic risk appears to be coming off the table. So if you're short here, there's no reason necessarily to take things off just yet. The tape action isn't pretty, but you have to have, you know, your checklist sitting by. What happens if the market starts to go against me? How do I manage my position? Do I extend it or do I walk away for a little bit? I happen to think this could be a walk away for a little bit kind of occasion to reset short positions in the market at a higher level moving forward.
Right. I mean, that's exactly the thing I'm looking at. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think just as what you were looking at in the first quarter, where you were saying the trend is up, I'm not looking to be a seller. I am looking to buy. And if there are setbacks, I'm looking to take my money, let the setback happen, reload, go again. But I'm not looking to be a seller in a rising market. And I was with you. I stood aside until it all stopped. I wasn't trying to pick the top on it. I wasn't trying to fight it because that's a fool's errand to fight a trending market. So if this bounces or if this starts to look like it's anchoring, yeah, I'll probably get out and take my P&L, but it won't be because I think it's going higher in a lasting way. It'll be because exactly. I'll want to get back short at higher levels.
And I'm looking here at the 4 hour time frame in the NASDAQ, the ugliest of all the charts. Yes, you have a long wick overnight. You have another little long wick down here. Maybe it's a double bottom coming into play near 17,200. But the last 4 hour candle here, small little rally. You know, we basically
wiping the previous two. Yeah. Not right? great.
No, and we talk about resetting, erasing the geopolitics risk. The 4 p.m. candle yesterday, where do we close at? 17,049 and a half. Where do we rally back to at the high today? Just through that, 17,553 and a quarter. And then big outside engulfing looks through like the prior candle high. So that stair-stepping continues. Now, maybe because we've established a higher swing low here, that's a sign of a bottom forming out. And again, the range move is 17,300. Thanks to that range of 18,000 up to 18,700, 700 points from the neckline. And we are currently sitting there. So again, perhaps an exhaustion point, but one of the telltale signs that's happened in this market during the decline, when you go to the lower term time frame, do you see us holding below this little EMA envelope?
Yeah.
Have we established us on the other side of that? No.
Will or it give even us come in to test it, really?
Not even really, right? So momentum is firmly negative. You'd have to scale down to like a 13 and an 8. To see any interaction, but that just goes to show how firm this negative impulse is. Yeah. And when you look at stochastics bouncing around in oversold territory and look how MACD just plunging here still,
yeah,
there's no sign that the momentum to the downside has exhausted. So choose your adventure. Yeah. If you're a bull, you probably feel pretty good about the Dow Jones and the Russell. Better than you
Dow
do if
Jones
you're in the
looks, Dow right Jones now. Looks a little better here. I mean, it's almost as if you've been saying for a while that in bull markets, the generals don't typically get shot first. And this seems like, and by the way, I agree. That's historically how it's worked. This seems to be not that. This seems to be more like, which, I mean, markets do things and then they don't. So who's to say? You can absolutely have a reasonable expectation looking at the past and say, well, every other time it's done, or not every other time, but most times, it's done this. Does that mean it necessarily has to do this time? Of course not. But you do have to have some kind of a baseline, and you can only look at the past. Nobody can tell the future, so your baseline is based on the past. But what it looks like here, just looking at the price action today in the past several days, is where the speculative froth might have thought to be greatest, sort of the AI narrative, et cetera, et cetera. That's, in a strange way, distributing into other indices to basically say, well, the economy is okay for now. We don't necessarily want to be like bared up to the point of utter liquidation, maybe, though everything is falling. But maybe it's the NASDAQ that falls hardest, because if you want it to be less than fully bearish, you might say, okay, well, let me get out of the really concentrated space, but let me have some equity exposure. And so maybe the Dow, as the kind of least rates sensitive of the bunch, maybe that's how it manages this. And again, obviously nobody can go out and do a poll of every single market participant, so who knows? But it feels like that, looking at the tape action here.
Yeah, it's definitely some rotation, and maybe that has to do with the options expiry. I would point out that the Dow here is trying to churn through its 2134 EMA envelope on the 4-hour time frame. IVR is 69.4. You could see this as a broadening wedge down here. There's pretty clear resistance up near 28,300.
Very clean resistance. Talk about a line getting made by three points here.
And the downtrend has been, this EMA envelope, for whatever reason, for this month, has been fairly well respected as candles come up into it and typically fail right there. Uh-huh. The fact that we haven't thus far, that's why if we find ourselves closing through that 38,300 level, you have a little bit of, hey, bulls actually have a glimmer of hope somewhere in the market. And given the fact that it's a 69.3 IVR and its behavior that's uncharacteristic of how the markets behave during the downtrend since April 1st, if I'm a bull, the Dow is the place to look first and foremost right now. Is the actually, I think, the only place you can look with any sort of degree of confidence.
Pretty much.
Otherwise, you're bottom fishing without a bottom. Like with the NASDAQ, it might be a double bottom, but do you really want to try to call that now with that engulfing bar last 4-hour candle?
On a Friday,
yeah. The S&P just having hit that resistance from the descending trend line from the week's highs? Probably not. So this is the place right now, if you're opportunistic, 38,300. That's the number, that's the line in the sand for the Dow. And you have 37,500 here as an anchor point, 37,250 for potential short spread. You're going to have to do it through something like the ETF, though, because obviously we don't have options here on YM. And that's the only unfortunate thing about YM, which is why we don't talk about it as much as we do the NASDAQ or the Russell or the S&P 500. Because, well, we focus on options here. So, but the Dow to me is the one that we really need to be thinking about, at least at this point in time, just because of where we are. And you have to just pick and choose. That's it. At the end of the day, you just have to pick and choose with your opportunities. You can't just be obsessed with one index. Be ticker agnostic. But the bears right now, Ilya, one of the reasons why I think they still have a shot, you talk about what's happening here in stocks. We're going to have to go over and talk about this bond market, which continues to track oil over the course of the session. Last night, it was the war trade. And you could see that playing out. And even so, over the course of today, still the war trade. Stocks down, bonds up, oil up, gold up, yen up, dollar up, Aussie down, loonie down, right? Everything else down. So when oil pulled back last night, bonds pulled back as well. This daily candle looks horribly ugly to me. That's about as clean of a shooting star one could get. And this is the crazy thing about the market right now. Bonds and oil are tied at the hip, and bonds are not getting a safe haven bid in this market when stocks are down, thanks to what's happening on the inflation expectations front.
So I will say, this is a really interesting candle structure now.
What's good about this?
So let's forget this weird candle, this inverted hammer, whatever that thing is. Let's go back to the preceding two green candles. The first big one is about as textbook of a bullish engulfing as it gets. And by the way, I'm not long here, so I'm not even talking my book yet. So when you look at this, that's a very clean bullish engulfing. That looks like a key reversal, and that's a bullish engulfing for a secondary bottom. And if you look at the stochastics, you look at what's going on with the MACD histogram, I use RSI, which is basically the same thing. Choose your adventure as far as oscillators. I just like RSI because it's one single line. And so for those of us that do technical analysis with crayons, that's the one for me. But I look at this and I say, okay, well, we're setting lower lows, but momentum isn't turning on the indicators. It's not following. It's diverging. And we're starting to get these candles that look like they want to round off something. Now, is this something that's a buy here? I don't think we have that kind of confirmation. But you're starting to get something like a skidding into a bottom.
Interesting. 42.6 IVR in bonds right now. You know, with that big reversal candle, is this a place where I'd want to sell puts? No.
Take a look at 10Y as well. See, look, again. Sure. Back-to-back bullish engulfing candles here. One that doesn't work, secondary bottom, the low of which is still holding, lower lows, and the oscillators are not confirming them. They're diverging. Interesting. This could be something. I don't think it's confirmed. I don't think there's a tradable setup here at this point. The risk-reward is maybe not the best, because the trend is clear and we haven't violated it. Still a series of lower highs and lower lows, but my interest is peaked.
I'm thinking about the relationship between bonds and the rate cuts.
Yeah, especially at the long end, which is... Not, I mean, at the front end, yes. At the front end, it's like real one for one there. At the long end,
it's not as closely tied. No. The correlations are still positive, but, you know, when you look at like ZT and SR3, they typically hover around like 0.96 to 0.99, which makes sense just conceptually because the SR3 is secured through overnight collateral. And if you think about the futures market, the closest thing that you have as a proxy to overnight collateral is ZT, because it's 2 years.
Yeah.
So the short end of the curve, and the closer you get in, like if you were to go to a 1 month bill, it's going to have an even tighter correlation to the SR3 contract than ZT will.
All of that. Yeah.
Right. So the closer you get to overnight, the tighter the correlation basically. So as you go out to the long end of the curve, the correlation gets away because you're not using a 10-year treasury note for securing overnight borrowing.
And now there's all this other stuff in the yield. There's term premium. There's this, there's that.
So, but if we've gone to a world where we now only have one cut priced in for this year, it's only April. To get us off of one cut, we would need to see a lot of evidence. Yeah. We probably need to see at least 3 to 5 more months of bad inflation data, which I think may be coming, quite frankly.
It could be.
But as a catalyst in the short term, to get the market into a place where it completely removes all of the Fed cuts for this year without the Fed first going there themselves in an official policy statement. Yeah, we heard the talk from Powell. Maybe that catalyst is running out. I still think that June needs to be zeroed out for those cut odds, which they're close. They're getting closer every day, but that's a weight. That's an albatross around their neck right now. So it means just more grind. ZB has a 25.2 IVR. I see a series of lower highs and lower lows. With this price action today, am I truly compelled to say I want to sell a put spread right here, right now? Not exactly. If
no, me neither.
If bonds are good for as a geopolitical hedge, and we think that geopolitical risk is coming down because of how oil vol and gold vol has evolved over the past several days, where it's closing this week relative to where it started, do we think that bonds may be losing an important catalyst that has helped keep them afloat on some days recently? I mean, what's been bonds' only positive catalyst this month so far? War headlines. So absent those war headlines, what has gold, what has the bond market been doing? It's been trading lower.
Absolutely.
I'm still not compelled to be long here. Someone tweeted at me last night, like, is it time to sell? And I said, not yet. And I was thinking about it. And then I went to bed and I woke up this morning. And so I missed it. So I have no trade here now. I thought it was going to go a little bit higher.
I was texting you about this. I was looking at putting on an MCL put spread, basically once it became clear that the Iran thing was theater. And frankly, the risk reward was just not attractive. It was like 1-to-1 for just receding nonsense. So basically back to unched on the day. I was pricing it this way. I was pricing it that way. I went to a closer contract, a further contract, and it was just pricing in makes sense. We're in the middle of a geopolitical risk, so it makes sense that markets go, we don't know. It's going up, it's going down, 50-50. So I didn't take it just because it looked like, you know what, I'm going to do this on a lark, and then if it doesn't work, I'm going to hate that I did it because it doesn't go with what my strategy is and with the way I typically approach markets. I'm going to not. But it did exactly what you might think. It just reverted as though nothing happened.
Bonds reverted like nothing happened. The Russell and the Dow reverted like nothing happened. Gold is no longer acting like nothing happened over the course of the day. When the U.S. market,
gold cares.
Well, that's what makes this so interesting, right?
There's no weird wicks on gold.
No, there's not.
Because the PBOC buying for their reserve account were not thinking about the Iran attack in their actions.
Well, today
that's
when we
my opened, conspiracy theory.
When we opened the U.S. cash open this morning, right around 9:30, gold was trading at like 2395, 2400 an ounce.
Yeah.
And so you had a more considerable upper wick. And it looked like this could be an exhaustion point, and gold vol is coming in 76.6 now. Yesterday it was, I think, 78 at the close. Earlier this week, you know, you were looking at readings of 100 in silver. When you go over to silver right now, 66.9. And so you see that gold vol was coming in, silver vol was coming in. Gold and silver are going back up today without gold and silver vol expanding now. And I think this underscores one of the points that we've tried to articulate recently around here, which is gold's enjoying something right now that a lot of Bitcoin enthusiasts have used over the years, which is what you call narrative flexibility. Joe Weisenthal over at Bloomberg, I think he's the first person that I heard this term deployed by.
Good term.
Several years ago, because it's like,
flexibility.
And it's what the stock market had earlier this year. Oh, rate cut odds are going up. Okay.
I'm going where I'm going.
Right? The economy's better.
Later.
Yeah, exactly. The economy's getting better. Oh, that's better for corporate earnings. I'm going up. It didn't really matter what was happening. The market had narrative flexibility on the upside. Bitcoin had that years ago. It's an inflation hedge. It's a proxy for, you know, civil liberties. It's a reason to get away from control of banks or governments or yada, yada, yada. It's a high beta vehicle, right? All these different tools that when it's going up, even if that one narrative exhausts itself, there's something else ready there to take the baton. That's all you can say about gold and silver right now. Okay, so gold and silver up. So what? There's now a higher risk premium baked in oil prices permanently now that Israel and Iran are going to shoot directly at each other. That to me is a really important change here in the landscape about the geopolitical risk, which is probably not going to go away and gives me a higher floor for these kind of sensitive commodities moving forward. The whole deal previously was that Iran, which has been at war with the United States and Israel since 1979. The United States and Israel may not be at war with Iran, but Iran's been at war with Israel and the United States since 1979. The whole name of the game was Iran would attack U.S. and Israeli interests, not directly, not from Iranian soil, but through proxies like Hezbollah, like Hamas, like groups in Yemen, in Iraq, in Syria. And when the United States and Israel wanted to strike Iran back, they would do so through the proxies in Syria, in Iraq, et cetera, et cetera. Once Iran jumps into Israel with their missile barrage, the name of the game changes, right?
Yeah.
This is a different level of engagement than we've ever seen historically. And Israel, in some quarters, which now in hindsight proved to be the prescient line of thinking, they needed to respond not in a significant way, but in a way that showed Iran, listen, we're just not going to sit here and idly let you attack our home soil. We have the capabilities to hit yours too. We're not relying on our friends, the United States, and mutually interested partners in Jordan and Saudi Arabia to just shoot down your rockets every time you guys get bothered by something that we do. So they had to reset. They had to reset the terms of engagement. And in doing so,
the deterrent had to get reinstated, as it were.
And so now you're back to an even playing field where both sides know that we can shoot missiles at each other and no one wants that. And so let's not escalate this further.
That, by the way, what you just said was that what you just said, I think, is the most encouraging part of all of this.
Right.
That both sides said, no, we don't want this.
Particularly on the Ayatollah's birthday.
Let's just reset here.
Well, particularly on the Ayatollah's birthday. No, no one does. But if you would think about, like, what would be more offensive? How would Kim Jong-un react if South Korea decided to blow something up in North Korea on his birthday? He would probably take that as a very personal slight. Or if Ukraine something.
Yeah.
Well, what if Ukraine did something in Moscow on Vladimir Putin's birthday? How do you think Putin would respond? The fact that something happened to the Ayatollah on the Ayatollah's birthday and there is a very measured, restrained response, to me, is a very subtly psychologically encouraging thing.
No, this is good.
That doesn't mean that the premium is going to leave here, because this is now a new stage of engagement. The escalation ladder may no longer be climbed up at this point in time,
yeah,
but we're no longer going to climb down to where we were a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And so gold and silver have that going for them still. And the vol may come out of this market like it has today, but have gold and silver prices come in at all? Not really.
No. And I was talking about this with Vic on his show, The Price of Truth, earlier in the week, and he was asking me, like, what do you do with gold here? What do you do with silver? Do you buy? Do you sell? Do you do anything? And the playbook I kind of laid out was, if you look at the price action here, it's very clearly not geopolitics. It's very clearly not the Fed that's at work here. Again, my tinfoil hat whispers into my ear that this is Chinese reserve buying.
Okay.
And when you look at those numbers, go up to 11% year-on-year growth for Chinese gold reserves, you kind of understand sort of why the tinfoil hat thinks these things. But when you consider, okay, so the Fed hasn't endorsed the markets in their moving about on rate cut expectations. They have a Fed meeting on May 1st. They're going to have to say something, but it's probably not going to be the big one. It'll be something like, listen, the board is clear. We could do this, we could do that. We're not rushing into either thing. We'll see. They come back in June and the SEP changes. That'll be very difficult for metals to ignore, but it also will not be the thing that changes Chinese reserve buying dynamics, which probably have quite a ways to go yet. I've guesstimated that at a pace of 11% year on year, at least in gold, for them to fully be able to settle their volume of trade with Russia, just to basically say, look, we can backstop all of our Russia trade volumes in gold now. And now you can, let's say, turn to an India or an Iran or something else and say, you don't need to clear through SWIFT. You don't need to go into a dollar-based world at all. in this limited pocket of transacting will clear you. And look, it's gold backed. It's not just our fiat that says this is okay. So if you wanted to fully backstop just the trade in Russian crude, you would essentially say at a pace of 11% year on year, which maybe is now a little faster, you'd have to keep doing this until the first quarter of next year. And by that math, if the Fed comes out and smacks this thing back down because they revised the SCP, it's not that you're looking to pick a top. It's that you're looking to buy the correction.
Couldn't agree more. The technicals here are awesome.
Yeah.
This is you saw it in silver up on the screen for a little while.
Yeah.
You see it here in gold. If you're looking at a weekly chart or daily chart for gold, it's been a 2+ year long. Actually, you could say longer than that because you're going back to the highs that you have in August 2020. It's been nearly a 4-year long sideways shuffle, which given the measured move, you're talking about a target initially up towards 2575 or so.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about silver on that monthly chart, it's just breaking just now this month, breaking the downtrend from the June 2011 high.
Yeah.
These are markets that are in breakout territory after many years, or in silver's case, more than a decade in what was ultimately a triangle consolidation.
Yeah, so paint drying, grass growing.
And very much like with equities, right? Very much with like equities, when the market's going up, I only look to buy things, not to sell. When the market's going down, I only look to sell on rallies and not buy until there are bottoming signs, right?
Right.
And in these, because we're in such significant multi-year, multi-decade breakout territory, zero interest except for how and when to get long. The only consideration at play for me. So if the Fed gives us a big setback, thank you very much, Jay Powell. That would be, as far as I'm concerned, that would be a welcomed gift.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I'm thinking about it.
We need to speed run this here at the end, so we're going to pop on over into oil prices. Oil prices have had such a fascinating, and not Clorox.
It's been a spicy day.
Not Clorox, crude oil. There's that long wick. We're back
About 84 as it receded back under the range. I'm like, let me get an MCL spread. Let me get an MCL spread. Ah, this pricing grumble.
You could see last night that right around 8:45, 9 o'clock, we begin to take a leg higher. And sure enough, we're up over 4% on day at that point. We come crashing back in. We've been rallying a little bit back over the course of the session, although it's been a feeble rally. Not like we're up too substantially on the day. I think 0.49% now, we're up by 0.8% a few minutes ago. So oil prices are coming back in. But look, we can go to the daily chart as we've been looking at here. Where we close today may very well be important. The fact that geopolitical risk premiums coming out of this market may be important. Oh yeah, that weekly chart, I know that we've been having some fun with here. Is this an evening star candlestick cluster? I don't know, but 82 appears to be the line in the sand, and we're going to hold above it perhaps if this is where we close this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a top may be here, but it's not exactly all the evidence that you want right now if you're a bear.
No.
So if you've done well this week, like Dylan has, you know, he took some profits and then he rolled out further. Today's a great example of why it's important to roll out further. All those gains would have been obliterated overnight. And he would have been looking at a very steep loss with a contract, a position with one day to expiration in the face of a 4% rally. Your short calls in the face of a 4% rally with one day to expiration, that is getting kicked in the face repeatedly. Instead, he took the profits.
You're scared for your life there.
Instead, he took his profits, went out 60 days. So the overnight whipsaw he could live through. And today, with oil still being effectively unchanged and vol coming back in, being short the calls, actually, if you had the gusto to hold them, that's a good thing. So that's why time is your friend. If you're trading this right now, we may get a little bounce next week. We're not fully committed to the downside and the topping just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But oil vol coming back in last night, and the fact that it hasn't really rebounded significantly today, says a lot about the geopolitical risk premia in this marketplace. Ilya, the dollar was down a lot earlier. It's now back up. The yen is weaker on the day. That has a really ugly candlestick as well. There's no reason to go bottom fishing just yet, but it's worth noting the IVR in the yen was flickering north of 70 today. Currency vol is back. What's next on the calendar for Monday? Well, keep in mind it is a Fed communications blackout week. There's not that many important things. Perhaps ECB President Lagarde's speech is something to keep an eye on if you're trading the euro. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until Tuesday for more action. As we wind down the show, as we typically do, a brief bit of education. Today, we're talking about trading hours, which, what time to talk about trading hours given what happened overnight? Go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures. Here you can find this link to go to this great coursework put together by the fine folks on the Tasty Live research team. We talk about trading hours. Futures markets are open 23 hours a day, 5 days a week. They open up on Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. They close the following day at 5 p.m. Eastern for 1 hour, and they reopen at 6. That continues until Friday at 5, and then they close for the weekend. And you know why that's great? Because last night when cash equity traders were sitting on their hands watching the fireworks in the futures market, wondering how big those gaps were going to be, in the futures market, you can manage those positions because liquidity is there in things like CL or ES, even during those overnight hours. So you have overnight liquidity all week long. Fantastic vehicle for that geopolitical event risk overseas. Great to watch, great to trade. Quite frankly, Ilya, last night was very exciting. I'm sitting here at midnight. Everyone's asleep in the house and I'm watching Iranian state TV on Twitter trying to figure out.
And we're texting back and forth going, are you seeing this?
Should we get on the lows? But that's what futures does for you. It gives you the opportunity to operate when the cash equity markets are not open. It's one of the reasons why I love futures myself. Tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, or click the link here on the bottom of the slide. It will take you there directly. Ilya, we are done this week on Futures Power Hour. What a week it's been. Ooh. In everything, gold, oil, bonds, stocks. Hopefully next week has more excitement in store. For Ilya Spivak, I've been Chris Vecchio. Have a good weekend. Good luck trading the rest of today. After a brief break, Tasty Live will continue, of course. You have more Dr. Jim Schultz with From Theory to Practice. See you soon.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.